Welcome to the Human Performance Podcast. Here we talk about everything to do with human performance and how leaders and organizations can get the best out of themselves and their people. I'm your host, Alex Young.
On the podcast this week is Dee Caffrey. Dee is one of sport's most accomplished offshore sailors and boasts a remarkable career that includes 6 laps of the planet, 3 of which were solo. Dee has challenged diversity and inclusion in the sport of sailing with the project she's undertaken and received an MBE for her sport and charity work. We talk about leading high-performing teams, owning outcomes, and how to both deliver and receive honest feedback. Hey, Dee, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm good. It's really nice to join you today, Alex.
Well, it's fantastic to have you. We were just joking before we started recording. I'm actually out at a place called Club La Santa this week, which is very, very sporty. And it seems quite appropriate that we're recording from this location this week because your background is actually unbelievable in terms of sailing. And I'll let you introduce yourself in a second to the listeners. But I think my favorite piece of information about you, and I was prepping for this podcast, is that not only were you the first female to circumnavigate the globe, but you did it in the incorrect direction against the wind, which is, going against the odds and making things even more difficult for yourself. So why don't you sort of let everybody know about all the amazing things that you've achieved?
Well, yeah, based on that introduction, I'm kind of known for going the wrong way around. And there's something to say with women drivers. So I'm going to put that to rest straight away. It was nothing to do with being a woman driver or having bad navigation. I was meant to go the wrong way. I've actually sailed around the world now 6 times in both directions. So west about, which is against the prevailing winds and currents. So what's considered the wrong way round and the right way round. I've done it leading a team. I've done it on my own in both directions, nonstop. I've been part of a team. Like all the combinations you could think of, I've had experience doing. So with 6 Laps of the Planet, it's exposed me to a lot of different interactions with people and with remote communications, with that hostile buildup of emotions in like a fizzing hot box that you can't leave. You can't walk away for a break or anything. So it really has allowed me to experience a multitude of atmospheres and environments and creations that's got the best and the worst out of people.
And I absolutely, I love sport myself. I've played to a kind of a good standard, but nothing, anywhere near what you have done. But I think just growing up and being very, very sporty, I always reflect back on what I'm doing now, whether it was in surgery or whether it was in business, that some of the skills you learn, like you mentioned leadership, you mentioned teamwork, are just so important and so transferable. What, for you, looking back on those experiences, what were some of the things that you still use every single day now, which you found just unbelievably important when you were going through those experiences?
So much of it. And it's strange. I started my career as a school teacher. So I spent 5 years teaching before I did the career change and went into professional sailing, which then led me to my multiple round the worlds. It wasn't an intention. It just was about grabbing opportunities. And I was really worried that all the investment of the time and effort through my family and the support and what I invested my time and efforts in leading up to that career change, had I just thrown it away? Had I just wasted all that hard work? But actually, so many skills are transferable. And whether it's in a sporting context or just in an environment that pushes you and challenges you, you find that you get skills and tips and hints that you'll find that you can implement in different arenas all the time. And I go back into schools now and I talk to the young people today and I have to let them know that it's not about deciding what their future is going to be. Because 20 years ago, when I first did that career change, it was quite unusual. People did have a career for life. But actually, these days, it's about opportunities and it's about having those skills that are transferable because life is very transient. We move and move around and opportunities arise and the world's got a much smaller place, be it on a digital scale or even a physical scale. And so it's a very different environment. And that worry I realize now was unnecessary because all our chapters of our life help build who we are today. And hopefully you implement all the good bits that you've learned along the way.
Absolutely. And, you know, there'll be many people listening to this podcast, my mum included, who are, you know, she's now retired, but she was a school teacher as well, who, you know, may be thinking, you know, gosh, how could I do something as amazing? How can I challenge myself? For you personally on that journey, what do you think it was that, you know, made you take on those big challenges and not just take them on, but, you know, do what you did to such a high level?
Well, I love teaching. It was almost like the right job, but too soon. And I still wanted to travel and have adventure. And I found sailing as my mechanism to do that. And as I said, I didn't have an intention of sailing around the world. It was about grabbing opportunities. But it's, you know, I go to school and go, oh, look at your school teacher at the end of, you know, at the end of the row there. They could do, I was in that position, they could do what I've done. And it's not necessarily everybody's going to sail around the world, but we've all got our own version of sailing around the world, that big challenge, whether it's to go for that promotion, to have a career change, to, you know, apply for something or to run the marathon or set yourself that challenge that's beyond your comfort zone that you think is unattainable and put the building blocks in place to build up to achieve something. And for me, it's about having the challenge, pushing the boundaries and going through the process of developing to get to the ultimate goal.
One thing I really want to just, you know, spend some time and dive into, because whenever we have sort of people on this podcast or I interact with sort of high performing people, either they have done something incredible that's very sort of solo based because that's their personality and you know, they love doing things by themselves, or you have people who are very team based and we talk about the importance of teamwork and so forth, but you've actually done both. And just before we sort of dive into some of the elements of both, you know, being a sort of solo sports professional and a solo achiever and being in a team, what were the key differences, do you think, looking back on some of those experiences, comparing when you were doing things solo to being in a team? And also, which did you prefer, do you think?
That's a really good question, because it is almost two different personality traits you would expect. But I mean, some of my team members that have sailed with me may disagree and say that I'm completely a solo sailor. You never know. Maybe you shouldn't ask them that. But I think it's about that empathy of the people with you. And then that when you're on your own, having that tenacity and that resilience to find the depth yourself, to pick yourself back up and keep going. When you're with a team, you've got that empathy and there's that support network. And not everybody has a bad day at the same time. So you get to bounce off each other and kind of go with the atmosphere and the buzz that's created, and you get by and everybody performs and you carry each other along. And when you're on your own, you have to find that within and you have to dig deep at all those conversations that everybody has about digging deep and being resilient, but it's finding what works for you. So I have really flexible goalposts, and I'm somebody that has to have that sense of achievement. I like to tick off the jobs each day and feel I've achieved. So when life's really good, my goalpost is really far away. It's the next great cape or the next ocean. As things start to get more difficult, it comes that little bit closer, the next weather download or the next meal, or maybe just the next cup of tea, or maybe the next hour. And then I'll get to do something that I can reward myself with. So I'm very flexible so that I always have that sense of achievement. And I think I had to find that for me because I didn't have the people around me to bounce off. So now when I'm in a team, I try and create that atmosphere that allows everybody to feel empowered, to feel valued, and to feel like they're contributing, so that you get that dynamic that helps build each other up and keep each other going.
It's really interesting. I mean, one of my first businesses, I kind of created myself, did all the coding, did absolutely everything, and was very much a solo, you know, preneur. And I think there was a lot of kind of self-discipline needed around that, and that sort of suited my sort of slightly type A surgical personality. But it's very interesting hearing you talk about empowering teams, because a lot of people listening to this podcast will be part of a team, either in business or, you know, they might be part of a sports team themselves. What is that secret sauce to really empowering your team? Is it culture? Is it empathy? What are your sort of experiences from you know, leading or being in high performing teams?
I think it's definitely a culture, and it's led from the top, because you form what you're creating beneath you. And if we've all been there where we get a bit despondent, we kind of zone out because we don't feel like we're involved, we don't feel valued, it doesn't matter whether we're there or not. and it's really easy to distance yourself. So I think you need to have that awareness when you're creating a team so that everybody feels that they're not only heard but listened to, that all their ideas are considered. Even if you make some ground rules where you're going to throw it out the door if it's not going to work, you know, you need to have some, you can't consider, it's not a democracy 100% of the time because it's sometimes a life and death situation. But if everybody feels that they're being valued and they're contributing to achieve the bought-in objectives that everybody's agreed to, there's so much more of an atmosphere created. And I think that leader really has to have that creation of the environment to provide the psychological safety for those involved to challenge, to speak up, to question, and to feel that they can make a difference.
And, you know, looking back on your time in sailing specifically, I'm not a sailor, and, you know, just trying to explain things to anybody listening about what a team in, you know, sort of a sailing challenge looks like, I would imagine probably not too dissimilar from a surgical team. We've got a multidisciplinary selection of people, each with their own sort of focus areas around what they need to do to then help the entire team to hit their challenges. How do you kind of, in a sporting setting, how do you sort of assign outcomes and how do you motivate people to work as individuals within that team environment? Especially, you know, when you know, some of the things that you've done, we're sailing around the world, it's endurance, it's, you know, high risk, certainly in some circumstances. How do you navigate all that in a team environment?
I think it's really critical that everybody understands their role within the team. And there's a lot of overlap. So there's a lot of kind of cross-pollination of people could do multiple roles. But what you spend a lot of time doing is playing to your strengths, so putting the right people in the right role within the team. And there's multiple roles, as you say, like a surgical performance. And you need everything to happen at the right time. So although one person's job is to do X, they can't do that unless Y happens and S happens and B happens. And they all have to happen at the right time. So it's like this coordinated performance. And what you need to do is have everybody confident in the person next to them so that they're not trying to second guess or try and do it for them. They've got to have confidence in the people around them that they're all going to do the right thing at the right time so it all happens. And I deal quite often in a multinational team as well. So we've got multiple languages. Luckily for me, we're sailing in English. And so a lot of these people are making these critical moves and conversations in their second language, sometimes when they're wet, tired, cold, often afraid, conditions are really difficult. So you have to seek absolute clarity so that everyone's on the same page before the action happens. So it's just almost like just holding everybody back just to double check and then letting it all happen. But you spend a lot of time building trust, getting the people in the right positions, and not being afraid to maybe stop every now and again just to check that you're still operating efficiently, because it's really easy for confidences to dip at different time and people just to change roles and you don't notice it because it's quite subtle. And sometimes I had a mixed team and I had to stop every now and again and go, stop, are we all in the right positions? Are we playing to our strengths to do this in the best way possible? And because there's a level of physicality involved, you know, quite often we need to swap a few people. And that's where people need to realize that it's not a personal reason. It's not because you're not trusted. It's because for the good of the team, we need to play it in these roles. So it's making sure that people are willing to be open for feedback so that they don't take it personally and they understand it's for the greater good.
And just, you know, leading on to, you know, from that comment about, you know, having mixed teams and things like that, I know you're a huge proponent of diversity, inclusivity, you know, across any sector, not just sailing. And you've done a lot of work around that. What are some of your reflections on, you know, team diversity in general? And how do you think, you know, people listening to this team who, you know, they might be sitting in an office in a corporation with predominantly white males, what can they do to change that up so that there is that diversity of both opinion and outlooks for their organization and their teams?
Well, the biggest fear I think a lot of people have these days is not trying to bang the drum, because people are almost more likely to switch off from that. So it's about how to engage so that it's a conversation that opens up for the future. And I mean, I'm guilty of it as a female sailor that's worked quite hard in this topic. I suffer from imposter syndrome. I have to have those little conversations in my head, that deep breath before I walk in a room. And I realize I'm leading by example. So I have to overcome this. And I'm thinking, okay, I probably need to let these people know that's the atmosphere that's being created because they're completely unaware. And a lot of it may be just an internal conversation in my head. And so we need to be really aware of that it's not a personal agenda, it's an open conversation. And the best way to address it is actually to have champions within. So if we're talking gender diversity, we need the male champions to spearhead the initiatives or to make the changes happen. That's the best and most dynamic way to get buy-in as quick as possible.
You're listening to the Human Performance Podcast by Verti. If you're enjoying this episode, why not join our newsletter? When you sign up, you'll receive a copy of Level Up straight to your inbox every Thursday with the latest tips, tricks, and news about all things human performance. Head over to verti.com/newsletter to sign up. That's verti.com/newsletter. You can find this in the show notes. Anyway, back to the episode.
And I mean, we can focus down on kind of gender diversity, but you know, any diversity period. What would you say to kind of anyone who's listening who is, you know, in either that they're female in a male sort of predominant environment, and I've worked in, you know, orthopedic surgery, which is completely male dominated, and often it's really difficult for females or people to go after those jobs or, you know, take on those challenges because the people that they see ahead of them don't look like them. They don't sound like them. They're very different. How can, you know, what advice would you give someone looking to take on a challenge or go into something that's perhaps, you know, not on the billboard, you know, showing their face or sounding like them and how it's being promoted?
Yeah. So often we have that adage, you've got to see it to believe it. And if we don't see it, we don't think it can happen. And it doesn't matter what minority you are, gender, social, economic, color, religion, it doesn't matter. There's that kind of, you know, culture that we have to change. Now, change takes a long time. And what we've got to do is realize that each small step we make, although it might be frustratingly slow or it might not really show itself on the outside, each small step is moving in the right direction. And it's small initiatives that grow and take root and then change the culture. And we're never going to change from the top down. So we have to change it from the bottom up because that's where the new recruits, the new blood, the new generation are coming from. And slowly that will, the top has to change because the bottom's not going to stand it any longer.
No, fantastic advice. And I think, you know, the other thing I'd really like to dive into is you've done this kind of 6 times sailing around the world. You've done some just amazing achievements on a boat, but equally there must be, you know, incredible setbacks. There must be times when you felt like, you know, you might not be able to kind of complete some of the challenges you were doing, or I'm sure you've got some horror stories, whether it's of storms or, you know, team members just becoming demoralized or missing family members and things like that. I was just wondering again, you know, looking back, have you got any examples of sort of, you know, upsets you had, and how did you kind of correct them in the moment, and particularly around your mindset with getting your team through some of those challenges?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of examples. As you can imagine, a few laps around the planet, a fair few things happen. The game changers are the race stopping moments. So illness and injury, the boat breakage that prevents anything going on. And they're the things often beyond your control. So, you know, if your mast is going to break and you're not going to have a mast anymore to be a sailing boat, that's your race over, but it wasn't through your doing necessarily. It might have been conditions. So that's the heartbreaking side of things. And then there's those things where you try and mitigate risk as much as possible, although we're in an environment that's controlled by Mother Nature, and she definitely lets you know she's in control. So you just have to be really mindful of that. And it's about putting things in perspective. So you're always looking for the best performance possible to be at 100%, 100% of the time. But it's about putting life in perspective. So if it's a massive storm and things are really difficult, you don't need to put your boat or the people at risk. That's when you can kind of take your foot off the gas a little bit, manage everything through those conditions. And then when conditions allow, get back on and start riding it hard. There's that saying where when we go into a storm, it's really easy to change down to smaller sails. Everything's very structured. And as the wind speed comes up in different levels, we change our sails accordingly. We get down to our smallest sails, we weather the storm. By then, we're exhausted, we're probably afraid, we're a bit tired, we're hungry. But actually, the team that can start to go through the transitions back up again to the big sails as you come out of the storm will get the biggest gains first, while the others are still going, oh, well, we'll wait a little bit longer, or we'll just have another sleep, or well, we just feel a bit, but it's still a bit gusty. And actually, those people that can transition quickest after the storm are those that are going to benefit. So it's about putting things in perspective and about knowing where the gains are. So put your foot on the gas, but knowing when to take it off is important. But equally, when you can start going fast again. And we've had the worst trauma ever where on a race, a fellow crew member of another boat, another team, actually lost his life. And the knock-on effect throughout the whole fleet, every sailor on board, because it's a small community, we all know each other really well. Everyone was affected, and everybody, the whole fleet, almost slowed down for 24 hours while everyone was dealing it in their own personal way and within the team. But ultimately, we were still in the Southern Ocean, still having to face Mother Nature and having to manage and control our situation. So it was about being very careful how we put our foot back on the gas. And actually what it did was ignite within my team that solidarity, that camaraderie, having each other's backs, checking on each other. And it really galvanized that we're in this together. I've got your back. Are you okay? Do you need anything? And I, you know, I was like a proud mum at the end of that, how that transition had actually impacted itself.
Goodness, I mean, that, you know, that's literally that is the worst case scenario, if someone passing away in that kind of environment. And as you say, the repercussions across, you know, not just the race, but you know, even beyond that, the sort of like psychological impacts, particularly for their boat and their team members as well, must have been pretty shocking. I mean, often kind of sports people, probably not too dissimilar from surgeons, are often very, very sort of focused on outcomes, very focused on the goals, very focused on training. When, you know, often we see kind of like Olympic athletes or you know, anyone, I guess, when they sort of retire and they take their foot off their own personal gas, start, you know, questioning, you know, what should they do? Or even, you know, especially for Olympic athletes, becoming a little bit depressed. We've seen, you know, quite a lot of that post some big events and during the pandemic. How do you kind of bring in things like sort of self-care, mindfulness, both, you know, around some of the challenges, around races, but also after actually, you know, when people stop doing what they've spent, you know, a huge amount of their time putting effort into?
It's really important to manage that. And having had the experience of having an all-encompassing 10 months of my life totally absorbed in a round-the-world race, and then it's almost the circus leaves town the next day, and you're looking around and you're like, oh, how do I transition back into normal life? And that was one thing I was very mindful of being a leader. So in my last round the world, I was the skipper of a team that was predominantly under 30. They were a young team, 10 nationalities. And it was, lots of them were really skilled sailors, so very gifted ability, but hadn't sailed around the world before. So this was their kind of platform to launch their careers from. And I was very mindful in those final, well, all the way through the 10 months of, trust me when I say, at the end of this date, the circus will leave town and there's nothing. You're literally left stranded. You know, start thinking about that. What's next? What are you going to have planned? Who are you networking with? And trying to help them create the pathway from this amazing achievement and event that they're involved in, of how they can make that work for them, because I'd experienced that literal hole that's left in your life. And as a result, you know, keeping that network, keeping that interaction. And it's really nice now for me to see that they've all gone on to other things. But you're right, it's whether it's a four-year cycle of an Olympic athlete, or no matter what, or even just a seasonal athlete that, oh, it's this season and then, well, what do I do the rest of the time? And it's really hard to find that drive to keep going to the gym, keep your off-season training on tempo so that you're in the right place at the beginning of next season so you get selected. And I think that's about having a network It's about having that support around you so that you're kind of challenging each other and checking in on each other, making sure you're on track, but also about not being afraid to just give yourself a little bit of time, because we also need that time to decompress, to process everything that's gone on, reevaluate our goals and our ambitions for the next season, and decide what path we're going to take. And then we can kind of plan fresh. And it's about not being afraid to do that. But I think it's so important to have a network so that you've got people to help you through those times.
And yeah, we've touched on it a little bit, but I want to, you know, really dive into a couple of things here. Whenever you're training for, you know, a big event, or you know, for you, you've obviously set yourself a goal and an outcome, which is to sail around the world or to, you know, take on a race and ideally win that race, which is very kind of outcomes based. And you're then going through a training schedule. Where for you does that kind of grit and determination come from, both to get through what I imagine is extremely rigorous training and time commitment, but then also like during the actual event itself, really push yourself, push your team members and focus on that goal of winning. And equally, you know, how do you think other people can start integrating that type of mindset into, you know, whatever they are doing?
I think it's about the big picture. You set yourself your aim to do the race. You want your objective of to win the race, and you're putting in the building blocks of how that's going to be achieved. Then you become accountable. And I think once you're accountable, you have to answer to that. So do you want to finish thinking, oh, if only I'd done this, or I could have tried a bit harder then? I mean, you want to finish knowing that you gave everything and you couldn't have given any more. And that whole conversation, especially when you're solo sailing, you know, oh, you've got to do another sail change, but you're tired, you're wet, cold, hungry. And it's like, oh, well, I could just wait. I'll have a little sleep. Or the fact that all your competitors have probably already done that sail change. So are you willing to just kind of be, oh, it's okay. You know, it's an amazing opportunity I've got, but I'll do it later. And it's just like, you can't do that. I think if you've put yourself on that platform, you owe it to yourself, more importantly, and then obviously everybody that's supporting you to do it, to give it your best shot. And I think it's all down to the accountability.
And yeah, one thing I'd love to kind of touch on, you know, with your background in teaching, I jokingly said before we started recording, I'm just a huge learning nerd, as anyone who listens to these podcasts or follows me in any capacity already knows. And I think one of my, you know, probably superpowers as a human is being able to, you know, take on board feedback and actively kind of seek out feedback and then, you know, better myself. And I've done that in a solo capacity, but also in a team capacity, and really try and infuse anyone that I interact with that same, you know, approach to things to non-judgmentally take feedback. For you, I'd love to hear, again, based on your, you know, solo experiences, but also your team experiences, what do you think some of the most important things around, you know, just being able to honestly take on board feedback and then implement those changes, and how's your sort of outlook on feedback in general?
I love feedback. I thrive on feedback. I actively go and seek it, but equally it's sometimes stuff you just don't want to hear. And so being prepared to hear the uncomfortable is really important, because actually when you're outside your comfort zone is where your biggest growth can happen, but also where your most mistakes happen. And so for somebody to call you out on those is hard sometimes, but actually that's where you're going to learn from your mistakes and move forwards in leaps and bounds. And it's so true. And even when in a team environment, you invest an awful lot on the debriefs and the briefings to make sure that there's been an opportunity to air those grievances, make those comments, and without judgment, put it on the table so that everybody then can digest it, take it on board, and then come back and go, okay, so this time we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and we're not going to do A, B, and C because it didn't work. And then you can move forwards. And I think all of us have inside us a desire to improve, constantly improve. But sometimes you need to get it out as a team of, that's one of our objectives, is to constantly improve. And therefore you open the door to being open to open and honest feedback. And it's just making sure that's delivered in a way where it's not a personal attack. It's not a vendetta. It may come as a frustration, but actually it allows you all to move forward so that everyone performs better and gets more comfortable with it.
And we sort of talked about again at the beginning of the podcast where you said, you know, that some of the best leaders provide a safe environment for their people. And that's obviously part of collecting feedback. You know, for you, again, reflecting back on, you know, perhaps when team members, particularly new or younger team members, have made mistakes, which you know, is just complete human nature. What are some of the things that you've seen in you know, this high pressure sporting and sailing capacities, which could translate to, you know, the business environment or anywhere else in terms of allowing your people to be fed back in a safe environment and then sort of take that on board and improve? What are some of the, you know, the key tips you think you saw when you were in these high pressure environments?
Well, the nature of a high performance athlete is they will actually criticize themselves. They'll be like, and then need to take themselves out. So they'll be like, okay, this is not for me. And I actually had that happen. And I was like, really, you're prepared to just give up on this halfway round? I was like, okay, just leave it. Let me have the opportunity to change the environment and see if it gets any better for you. Just trust me on this. And I literally just changed a few positions of people, changed a bit of the dynamic of the watch system, and it transformed the experience for that athlete. And I was pleased because I'd enabled her to have the confidence to say, no, this isn't for me. But she'd trusted me enough to, okay, well, let's adjust things and see if it's still not for you or whether we've made it better. And that willingness and openness to try new things was really good. And actually, the environment I was in, it was a two-way street because I'd been around the world before, I'd sailed the boats, I had the experience. But what I had was this young, enthusiastic crew looking at things from a completely different perspective. So they were challenging me all the time of like, well, why don't we do this? Let's try that. And they were studying images and videos from all the other teams and giving me that feedback of, well, they're doing this and we could do that. And I had to be open to the new ideas. And actually, it was just really, really enjoyable. It was invigorating to have that kind of input. And it was really nice. And I worked really hard on creating a team where rather than leader follower, and they kind of did what they were told, it was leader leader. They were engaged and empowered to take ownership of their areas of responsibility and the outcomes. And it was fabulous to see that growth over that period of time of these individuals. It was something I was really proud of.
And that's absolutely amazing. I think, you know, to this day, one of the things that I get most satisfaction from, which I'm sure is the same of you with your teaching background, is literally just seeing people progress, take on more responsibility and, you know, again, challenge themselves. So are there any kind of tips, you know, for people who might be managing teams, but particularly teams of new employees or, you know, young people coming through, where how can you think about things like, you know, turning them into leaders and helping them to decide things for themselves and really sort of push the boundaries and challenge them? Have you got any kind of tips again from seeing that happen?
Yeah, and I think it's hard for leaders because it's hard not to micromanage because you want the best outcome because obviously your hierarchy is looking at you and, you know, it kind of cascades down. But I would just say, you know, don't fall into that trap of micromanaging. Allow them the space to grow and potentially make mistakes, but be there to help pick up the pieces. And don't underestimate that value of giving them time for that debrief, time for that feedback, so that you can nip any of those little problems before they become big issues. And if you can have that time, they feel empowered and they start owning that responsibility and there'll be no end to their growth. And that's what you want. If people don't have responsibility and they're not empowered, they're kind of just turning up as a desk ticking exercise rather than actively engaged in what they're doing. So I think it takes a little bit of investment of your time and energy as a leader, but what you get from it is massive.
Well, that's fantastic advice. And, you know, as we sort of begin to wrap things up, Dee, you know, one of the things we do on this podcast, as everyone knows, is we ask people who their human performance hero is. So I'd be absolutely, you know, delighted to know who your human performance hero is, who's inspired you to do all these amazing things.
I'm quite easily influenced by a lot of people, so it's a big choice to make. But I think if I stay true to my sport of sailing, it has to be Sir Peter Blake, who's sadly passed away now, but a true inspiration, a New Zealand sailor that literally not only took on sailing in all the multiple disciplines that it has, but actually galvanized a whole country behind him and his team. There's a phenomenon of the Red Sox, and literally every New Zealand person in the world wore Red Sox in support of Peter Blake wearing his Red Sox and campaigning his America's Cup. And I think for somebody to have that much influence through something they're just passionate about and genuinely love doing, but to galvanize a whole nation behind them is really impressive. And I was fascinated with his story and what he achieved. And now I'm integrated in elements of his family, I'm delighted to say, and feel very close by having done what I've done as well.
Amazing. What a fantastic example. I've watched, some of your TED Talks on your website and, you know, seen some of the things that you've done kind of outside of sailing and, you know, whether that's charity work or whether it's picking up, you know, your MBE and things like that in the United Kingdom. You've done some amazing things. If people want to sort of find out a little bit more about what you're doing now, where can they go to find out a little bit more about Dee?
Well, that's definitely easy. Follow Dee Kafari on all the normal social media channels. So LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. And I keep updated with all my sailing exploits and everything I get up to throughout the year. So please follow on.
Amazing. And what do you, but just as we close out, what's the next challenge for you personally that you're taking on?
Well, this year I'll be double-handed sailing with Olympic legend Shirley Robertson, who's a double Olympic gold medalist in sailing. I've convinced her to go into offshore sailing, and our big race this year is the Round Britain and Ireland race in the summer. So we'll be doing that in August. It's a very long way around our coastlines, and it's very complex with lots of hazards or wind farms and oil rigs and the coastline, difficult weather. So it's going to be quite testing, but I know she can make a boat go fast. She's just got to do it for 2 weeks now.
Amazing. Well, best of luck with all the training preparations and the event itself. And I'm sure you'll absolutely knock it out of the park. And it's been a real pleasure speaking with you. And do keep us updated on all of your exploits.
Thanks very much, Alex. It's been an absolute pleasure.